Reading FC travel to Sheffield on Saturday without a league win since New Year's Day. 90 minutes later, and that unwanted record was swept away with the harsh Yorkshire wind. Welcome to episode 221 of the Tarless End Podcast with your host, Mark Mayer. And joining me through what I can only describe as a piece of cutting-edge technology through our new ZCZ-sponsored microphone is Simeon Pickup, the Tarless End editor. How's it going, mate?
Oh, thanks for having me. Felt like a bit like a drowned rat after the game because of Storm Dennis absolutely battering Sheffield. But good afternoon on the whole, and really enjoyable weekend.
Absolutely. The 3-0 win over Sheffield Wednesday, something that I think really it just boils down to me as the lovable championship scene of going to a team slightly out of form, obviously out of form somewhat ourselves, and getting the result. So let's talk about that in a couple moments then with the recap. Obviously, we'll be talking about the West Brom game as well, and, you know, have the usual mailbag, quite a full mailbag this week. But to counter that off, quite a small news bites as not too much has gone on around the club. So before we go into recap, as I said, ZCZ Films, our sponsor as we go through the season. So thank you very much to them. And also thank you to the Patreon subscribers who continue to put their hand in their pocket and show us a bit of recognition as one of the, hopefully, one of the leading championship podcasts there are. And it's gets into this stage of the season, you start to realise what do you do it for, and the, you know, the windy days and everything. But with a 3-0 win, we know exactly why we're here. So let's go into recap then and talk about that victory in Yorkshire.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Sim, 3-0 at Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend. We are now 2 points off the top half, which is a bit of a stepping stone if we can jump into that top 12, which Sheffield Wednesday currently occupy. And looking at the starting lineup for this game, we had a little bit of a shift away from the three-man back line. And this one in particular, it was a case of no Pele, no problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a little bit worried going into the game, to be honest, with Rinomota coming in for Pele. Obviously, Rinomota is a good player in his own right, but he has struggled a little bit sometimes in that defensive role. Certainly a really good tackler, really good at breaking up the play, but sometimes he doesn't have that same reading of the game that Pele has. But on the whole, I thought he really came in really well, put himself about really nicely, really bossed the midfield well at times. And although Pele's been really good for us recently and he's really come on and deservedly won our January Player of the Month award, he wasn't really missed that much because Rinomota and indeed Swift as well in a deeper role really pushed on and really compensated for him.
I do find it interesting as well, and this certainly came through with the first goal, is that Ovie Ejaria being on the left flank. I think when Ejaria is in his absolute pomp, I think you put him in the middle and you make things as many things as possible go through him, and that works out really well. As we've said on the show the last few weeks, things haven't necessarily been like that. Moving him out to the left does kind of take him out the firing line a little bit and opens up different abilities of different scenarios where he can create from. And that first goal, we saw him cutting in from the left. It was a beautiful through ball. You've got Puskás can take it if he wants, but he lets it go. Mate gets there, simple finish, 1-0 up. And that is the sort of Ovie Ejaria that we've been praying for, really. And when it comes to end product, I think perhaps being on the left flank is most suited to him.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, the thing that he's really good at getting on the ball and really running at a defence, but he needs the space to be able to do that in. And although maybe he can have more of an effect in the middle at points, on the whole, he needs the space to be able to work in, and he's more likely going to get that down the left side. And as he showed on Saturday, he can use that space, cut inside and really get infield and support the striker really well and have a big impact. But particularly with his end product, whether he's on the left or in the middle, it's about his confidence as well. And it's something that seemed to kind of go quite a lot in the last couple of weeks recently, when he seemed a little bit timid, a little bit shy, a little bit too safe on the ball. He didn't have those magical moments of really good control and really coming up with a bit of a spark in the middle, basically. He seemed to lose that in the last couple of weeks. But going by Saturday's performance, when he really seemed very positive, really creative, he seemed to have that spark back and that confidence back. And when he has that, there's not really much opposition teams can do to stop him.
No, absolutely. And the thing is as well with Ajari is that when he is on that left flank, he isn't actually afraid to go down the left and have it on his left foot, which a lot of strike or a lot of wingers rather, you know, they're very one-footed, which I'd say that Ajari doesn't really have as an issue. And him being out on the left meant that Michael Olise started. What did you kind of make of him through the kind of central, a bit of a fluid role perhaps? Because it kind of meant that Yaku Meite was on the right and himself coming in as well, being a left-foot player. How did that sort of dynamic work?
On the whole, I thought he was tidy and safe, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, he's still 18, he's still a young guy who's coming into the first team and really trying to get used to it. He didn't really have as much of an obvious impact on the game as obviously Meite did with the goal, or Ajari with the assist, with the exclusion of a penalty that he really should have won, and it absolutely incensed the away fans behind the goal. But as you say, it was a really interesting kind of dynamic with him in the midfield. You compare him to other creative players that Reading have at the minute. He's not just a dribbler or a passer. He's got a lot of things in his locker, which really allows Reading to have a more dynamic midfield, have one that's more mobile and rotates better. Because although he started as a number 10, essentially behind Puskas, there'd be times when he'd go out to the right or to the left to use his pace a little bit more, but also dropping back a little bit deeper. He's got that passing range when he can pick out other players. And as we saw with a really good crossfield for Jordan Obita at the City Ground a couple of weeks ago, he really does have that passing range in his locker. And him being in the team allows Reading that extra element. It's not just about relying on Swift or relying on Ajaria. We've got that extra player who can unlock a defence, and he did really well. Not too much for stealing the show in his own right, but still a tidy performance and really brought a lot to the midfield, so credit to him.
It's nice as well, really, that Bowen has recognised that it's not too much of a skill, because we've all recognised that Olise is a talent. But Bowen has been happy to sort of bring him in and use him in different ways and to find a space for him in the team when it's necessary and when he thinks he can do a good job. It just feels to me like Olise is a proper member of the first team now, rather than an academy player that, you know, is occasionally brought through. And I think that that's just a nice place to be with the youngsters. We had Osho on the bench, the centre-back, again on the weekend. Danny Loader, I'm not 100% sure if he had an injury, but he's kind of in and out a little bit more now. And Tom McIntyre's got an injury at the moment. So we've got players, you know, that I think in the teenage category that are fully fledged members of the first team for the time being, which is really pleasing to see. And in terms of this game then, as that was the first goal, and really the red card, you've got to say, changed the game in a way, with the 49 minutes, the Sheffield Wednesday defender getting sent off. For a second booking, there's absolutely no arguments with the second yellow, and it's very, very nearly a penalty as well. In terms of how we see this game, though, Sim, would you say that it was a tight game going either way up until this moment? Because obviously the two goals that we kind of go and seal it with after might not have happened. Would you have kind of taken away the red card, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it was fairly tight on the whole until that one, but it was more... when the red card happened, it was more seemingly that it sucked the life out of the home crowd and the home team, to be honest, because obviously they've not been on a particularly good run of form recently. And when that happened, it just, you could sense their frustration get a lot higher. Really a really negative vibe in the stadium at that point. And Reading matched that really well. Reading used that really well. Really taking advantage of a restless home crowd and really played the occasion well. So it was a tight game, but it was more just about making the most of those key moments, and obviously made the lead a lot more comfortable with the second.
Yeah, and that's the thing, really, isn't it? It's a classic away performance when you can go away and shut up the you know, the home crowd and to get them on their own teams back and everything, and sort of drain the life out of it, which is very conducive to going and getting that killer second goal and the third. The injury time penalty was just an absolute bonus, really, just one to enjoy. But I would say for that second goal, George Puskás is now 2-2. He scored against West Brom in the week with a penalty. We've been desperately trying to cling to something with Puskás, haven't we, for, you know, since he arrived, really. And we've, the word that has always been spoken about is the confidence that he needs to go and become a player that, you know, bangs them in on a regular basis. He had the amazing performance against Cardiff earlier in the season, which didn't lead to form. He scored the last, you know, the last 15-minute hat-trick against Wigan that didn't lead to form. He's now got 2-2, and even though it was a penalty and a kind of little flick that scuppered through the goalkeeper's hands, is this again something that we're kind of clinging on to and saying, is it enough to you know, turn him into a player that is happy and confident to score regularly?
The goals are really important, absolutely, and certainly it's a case of anything that goes in matters. It doesn't really matter if it's a penalty or a little flick. If he's regularly hitting the back of the net, it's going to do wonders for his confidence, and that's the first time that he's scored in back-to-back league games. He had the League Cup game and the league game, I think back in August, earlier on in the season, didn't kick on from it, but scoring in back-to-back league games against West Brom and Wednesday is a really good way to boost your confidence. But it's not just about that, it's about his all-round game as well. And I think recently, perhaps even more than his lack of goals, the frustration from fans has been that he's either not the right tactical fit to play as a lone striker, or he just doesn't work hard enough in his own right to be a lone striker or up with someone else at all. So the important thing from the Sheffield Wednesday game was that he actually put in a really good shift all round. He was bringing other players into the game really nicely. He was working a lot harder, I thought, as well, than he has been recently. And it was his all-round game that was really encouraging. And I'm sure Mark Bowen will take a lot of heart from that as well, that he can, as he said with Michael Olise a couple of weeks ago, he can trust Puskás for that role. So credit to Puskás for doing that, and hopefully he can really kick on from that and really go on to better, more consistent performances in the future.
That's the encouraging thing, isn't it, really? That he is putting in a kind of shift, and it feels to me like a lazy-ish piece of analysis when you say, oh, he doesn't try hard enough, or that sort of stuff, because it's a difficult thing to sort of quantify in terms of what he's been told as well. But really, for Puskás, you would see so many times him lose the ball, run half a yard as a, I'm going to get it back, and then just stop. And that was always very frustrating as you know, fans, and it must be frustrating for teammates and coaches as well. And if we can get that sort of mentality out of his game, and if that is the problem, then, you know, hopefully we are going to get on to good things. And I would say that even if, you know, we're in February now, if he scores 5 goals between now and the end of the season, he's got something to cling on to and push for next season. And maybe that was kind of always the plan anyway, that maybe he wasn't going to be able to come in this season and hit, you know, 20 goals. If he scores 25 goals next season, it completely changes how we will look back on this season as how Puskás does. And I suppose that's the benefit of time that he has got on his side. Quickly, seeing their last word on the Sheffield Wednesday game before we hear from Mark Bowen. The stat that really stood out for me is that we had one less shot than Sheffield Wednesday. We had 9-10 throughout the game, and that clinical performance really is, it shows to me that we have got a really good idea at the moment of how to play away from home, and we're actually the 8th best team away from home in the Championship this season. There's only Fulham, Forest, Swansea and West Brom are the only teams that have lost less games than that's force of habit there, thinking they've lost more games than us. They're the only teams that have lost less games than us on the road this season in the Championship. And to be in that position is, I think it's a really sort of undercurrent to this season that's actually been really kind of satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. We're much harder to beat. You go back to previous couple of years, and if you'd gone up to Sheffield Wednesday, you would have just assumed that we would have maybe not get battered, but we would have lost it narrowly or lost it in really frustrating fashion. But under Bowen, we've become a lot harder to beat. We've basically got a backbone in games like this. We're really doing ourselves justice. And I think what really jumps out about that for me from the game is that the only real proper Sheffield Wednesday chance that made it onto the highlights after the game was a shot from, I think, Forestieri into the side netting. They didn't open us up. They didn't have really clear-cut chances. And sure, they're a poor team out of form at the minute, but you still would have expected them to work Raphael a lot better. And it's credit, certainly, to the back four, which has been a little bit malleable in the last couple of weeks with Yeardon coming back in and Richards coming back in on the left. But it's a really well-drilled, really hard-working defence at the minute, and getting a clean sheet in that game shows that. And even with Rinomota coming back in and Swift coming in front of the back four as well, he was often actually playing as the deepest midfielder, John Swift, and that says a lot about his maturity and the defensive side that he can add to this team. And certainly shows a lot about the progress that's been made about Bowen, from Bowen rather, that we can be so difficult to beat on the road.
Absolutely. And just to clear up, or just to add to rather the sort of statistical barrage then, only two teams have drawn more games than us on the road. That's Swansea and Millwall. And only three teams have conceded fewer goals than we have on the road: Fulham, West Brom and Brentford. And actually, you team that up with the fact that we're in the top half for goals scored on the road. So really, it is certainly on the road where we are having our fun at the moment, you could say. And when you look at the home form table and you realise that we're the 21st best home team in the league, that is probably, weirdly, the thing that needs to be sorted out. So we'll hear from Mark Bowen on the Sheffield Wednesday game. Then we'll come back and have a quick chat about why our home form isn't so good.
It's a nice feeling, and it seems to have been a little bit of a too long coming, you know, going that, so that's a period of time, just getting draw games and a couple of losses. So it was important we got back to winning ways. Obviously delighted with the result and the performance, but it was more what the lads took on board. You know, I'm asking them to come into today's game with the conditions and being like they were. I was emphasising them, it was about playing to, you know, playing what I call like intelligent football, you know, making the right decisions and the right choices, not putting yourself under pressure at the wrong times. And when we can get it down and play as well. And I think we did all those things, you know, and managed to, certainly, I didn't think we started the first 5 or 10 minutes too well, but as it grew into the game and, you know, Ovi and Michael Alessi and Swifty kept getting on the ball, I think we managed the game probably a lot better than they did. Obviously, the sending off helps, but, you know, I'm looking back on the game, I thought we had a Stonewall penalty in the first half. I asked Michael Alessi at half-time, he said, fella took him and not the ball. So, you know, that's a penalty. I think Ovi was clean through with a keeper to beat later on, which I think I nearly passed out when he missed that one. You know, we'd have put a 3-0 up, but it's professional. It's just reconfirmed things to me that I already knew, but, you know, going back, you didn't like the highlight. Did 3 games before today, we were in front of Cardiff, got pegged back, in front of Hull, got pegged back, and then obviously in front at West Brom. So when we got on those in front today, it was important how we handled it, and we did that very well.
Okay, so the West Brom game on last Wednesday night, we lost it 2-1, having taken the lead with a Puskás penalty, and then Pereira with a rebound and Kyle Bartley scoring with a header in early second half. As I say, that home form, we are 20 points out of 16 games so far. No wins in our last four at home in the league. And yeah, just Sim, it's an interesting one. We thought after the whole game that we hadn't really taken the game to them. The Bristol City game, I thought Bristol City were actually pretty decent. Are we saying that basically what's happened in this West Brom game is that it's kind of the latter? We were basically outclassed, in the sense that we might have still been a bit tired from the previous one of games, but also West Brom were just a better team than us. And even though we got that first goal, their sort of quality shone through.
I'm not too sure, to be honest. On the fatigue point, it's certainly a big factor, but we would have had fatigue on Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday as well. So certainly it could have come into play, but I still think we should expect more despite the heavy run of games. And on the point about West Brom's quality, they're a really good side and they did play some good football at times and defended pretty well, but they certainly weren't at their best. And I felt that if Reading had really taken the initiative on that day, they could have got at West Brom, they could have created a lot more. And it certainly wasn't an awful performance. We've seen much worse displays than that, certainly going ahead fairly early on and having a pretty good opening to the game showed that we were capable of some good plays. But on the whole, we seem to lack initiative. We seem to lack really the mentality to properly take advantage of a lead, essentially, to not take it for granted, to really try and build on it, to get into West Brom's faces and really have the belief that we could go on and beat them. And it shows that despite having that lead, we seem to let it go a little bit too easily. Really let our heads drop after the second goal, and for both the goals we conceded, it was really poor concentration. And if you do have that creeping into your game, then you're not going to be able to properly go up against West Brom and get a result. But if we can iron out those mistakes, really build on the mentality that seems to be there at home more than away, then we're a match for anyone. And it's just a little bit frustrating we didn't see it against West Brom.
I take your point on West Brom maybe being a bit of a missed opportunity because, you know, as you say, we weren't that far out of the game. But in reality, I think these cup games aside, you look at the home games we have between now and the end of the season, Wigan, Barnsley, Stoke, then we've got Brentford who are doing well, but then we have Huddersfield, Middlesbrough and Swansea to finish on. We're looking at a home run of form now that has a real potential to build up some sort of, you know, a bit of a record, a bit of momentum, that sort of stuff. If we don't take it, then we are looking at ourselves as, you know, any kind of momentum, except for next season. We're still thinking that the home form might actually be the real kind of worry that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're games in which Reading really need to take the initiative. And given the problems we've had with Swift and Ajaria in the last couple of weeks, obviously they bounced back really well on Saturday, but you want them to be able to perform consistently in home games and really strike their stuff, because they can certainly do damage on the road, but you want them to be really influential at home and really, really run a game and show that they're capable of putting in dominant performances, basically. And if we can get more out of them, then I don't see why we can't really boss these games and hopefully win a few of them quite comfortably.
Yeah, not won at home since Boxing Day. A win over QPR, which, to be honest, was reliant on a run, wonder goal and a couple of clearances off the line as well. So really not dominated a team since 21st of December. So that is something that we're really going to have to, you know, pick up as a club if we are to be serious about turning into a playoff competing side for, let's face it, next season. But as I say, that run-in, and generally speaking, just to give a bit of a preview for the run-in in general, teams we've got to go away to. We've got Leeds on the weekend, then there's Birmingham, Derby, Luton, Charlton and Blackburn. So we've just come out of what you've got to say is a really tough run of games. And we've only lost, you know, three of them this year, you'd say, Millwall, Bristol City and West Brom. All of the others, at the very least, avoided defeat, and that counts for the cup as well. So difficult sort of to get a real grip on the form that we're on at the moment, but hopefully Saturday's win will be enough to keep us going. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and, of course, where we go from here in the mailbag now.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
The Biscuit Analytic kicks us off and he asks, just how bad were Sheffield Wednesday? Now, Sim, this, for me, this kind of boils down into two questions. The first question is, just how bad was Sheffield Wednesday before they had a man sent off? And how bad were they after they had a man sent off? Because for me, I get the impression that, as you said earlier, their heads dropped completely after the red card. And from then, it was a walk in the park. Beforehand, however, I wouldn't say that there's much to say that they were terrible. I think we're probably the better team, but from what I've seen of the, you know, the stats of the game and everything, I think it's a case that they were an off-form team that had that sucker punch and that we gladly took advantage of it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But when you're a team like Sheffield Wednesday, you really want to take the initiative at home. You really want to properly go about trying to change your form, basically. You want to really take the initiative and go at a team like Reading, who are obviously also out of form. And to me, Wednesday just seemed directionless. We've had a lot of trouble against players like Barry Bannon in the past, who can really get on the ball and dictate a game and really put us on the back foot. But Wednesday didn't have anyone like that. I know Bannon came on quite late in the game, but didn't have much of an effect. No one else in their team had a similar effect, and it never really felt like Wednesday were controlling the game, like they were dictating the tempo or creating chances or anything like that. They looked most troubling to Reading when they were making the game more scrappy and more bitty. And obviously Reading have a really, for me, dynamic midfield that's really creative, but it doesn't quite have that physical edge without Pelé. And when you're playing people like Ajari, Swift, Elise, it can look a little bit lightweight. And it did, I wouldn't say struggle against Wednesday, but they caused more problems when they made it more bitty and more scrappy and more physical. But given that was the extent of their real impact on the game, I think it says a lot about the problems Wednesday are having, that they don't have that real ability to influence a game and to really, really build up some momentum in a match. And because of that, Reading didn't really get that troubled in the match.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's about how Reading can make it suit themselves, I suppose. And that's why I would say that Ajari, obviously we did play Elise through the middle this weekend, but I think Ajari on the left is a bit better for that. And I'm still waiting to see whether we go back to playing Pelé and Rinomota together, because Bowen, I don't think, has done that yet at all, actually, apart from maybe later in the game, just subs. So we'll see if that becomes, you know, it's a trump card, effectively. He still hasn't played, so it's good to see if he does that between now and the end of the season. Ryan asks, Mate deserves more respect for his performances over the last two seasons. Dave McCormack adds, Mate has got 10 goals or so this season, but offers precious little else. Are we right to carry him as a passenger on the hope he scores? And that is actually one of the stats that came out the weekend, is that Yaku Mate is the first player to score 10 plus league goals in two seasons in a row for Reading since Lafondre did it back in, I think that was 12, 13, 13, 14. So when we got relegated in the season back in the Championship. So it's a really nice stat for Mate. It shows to a large extent that Reading strikers have been rubbish consistently in the intervening years. But what do you think, Sim? I think that the thing is with Mate is that you've got a player who I think is very hit and miss in terms of sometimes he will score a really good goal. I think when he's through one-on-one, when he's in the area, you deliver a ball in, he'll take it, he finishes it, he's really good at that. What you get outside of the area, I'm not entirely sure that he delivers what we expect him to deliver. He doesn't deliver too much pace in terms of running forward with the ball. He's better with the ball played in front of him to sort of chase. He holds up the play reasonably well, but not brilliantly. His passing isn't something that I've ever particularly noticed as being good. His chasing and tackling is, again, something that I've never really noticed to be great. And as you can see, he divides the fan base. One person thinks that he's a passenger. One person thinks that he's underrated. And you know, Talas and Podcast Awards gave him the most improved player in 2018. So I suppose we have kind of, you know, we've acknowledged him to an extent in terms of when he has done okay. But I do take the point that some fans out there do really think that he's a really good player. So what do you think? Do we think that we kind of underrate him in not thinking he's a great player or what?
I think you need to basically accept the duality of Mate when you're analysing him. Certainly his goals are great, and anyone who's scored 10 goals in consecutive seasons deserves respect. And whether they're easy tap-ins or whatever, as we go back to with Puskas, it all counts. And if he's consistently scoring goals in teams that haven't been particularly consistent during his period, remember he was scoring goals under Paul Clement when Reading weren't doing particularly well under him.
For Mate
to be scoring consistently, all credit to him, and he deserves respect for that, and fair enough. But to acknowledge my own views on him, essentially, I've been quite critical of him, I think particularly this season, because I get frustrated by his lack of technical ability, his lack of hold-up play, and particularly when you play him as a striker, he doesn't have that ability to bring others into the game. And we've talked about Reading's lack of a target man in the last couple of weeks and the last maybe month and a half or so, and Mate doesn't fill that. And although certainly had a lot of success as a centre forward. He doesn't have that all-around ability that this side really needs. But if you're going to play him as a wide forward, as we did on Saturday, he can be really effective. And as you saw for the goal, his movement was really, really good and really well-timed for that pass from Ajaria. It's one thing to have Ajaria running at a defence and to have the vision to see a pass, but for Mate to time his run that well shows that he can be really dangerous in the final third, and it's a big value to this side. So it's about, I guess on the whole, it's about finding a balance, basically, between minimising how much we have to rely on the weak parts of his game, essentially. So don't make him try and hold the ball up. Don't make him try and pass the ball around. Leave that job to Swift and Jari and to Elise, but really try to get him into the final third, get him there in support of Puskás, which is another key thing, getting bodies around Puskás, and Mate does that well. And if you get that balance right, then he's an effective player. If you don't, then he isn't. Simple as that.
Do we think as well with Mate that perhaps the way that he is perceived on social media, for example, he seems to be a very sort of loud, perhaps volatile character. He seems to be very popular within the squad. If you follow the players on Instagram, you see that he's, you know, constantly doing stuff in the dressing room and seems to be good friends with a lot of players, and that all seems to be great. Do we think that therefore, because he's only 24 at the moment, is that sort of personality, for me, stands out as the sort of person who should become a leader within the dressing room and turn that sort of, you know, popularity into something much more sort of positive? And I don't know whether it's just something that we don't see ourselves, but just something that is, you know, it's sort of like a Jason Roberts-esque figure, someone who is obviously not afraid to speak their mind and all that sort of stuff, and turning that into a positive force. Is that the thing that we're also kind of looking for from him? Are we looking for these kind of loud personalities to become leaders? Because you could say at the moment that we don't really have too many leaders that we as fans can kind of recognise at the moment.
I don't know if he's necessarily out to be a leader. Obviously, that's something we might find out in the next couple of years as he grows and develops at the club. But you can still have a really big positive impact behind the scenes by being a loud character, as you say, by being a really bubbly, positive guy in the dressing room. That really helps other players there. And when things are going really well, he's obviously going to be loud about it, and it really makes it easy for the fans to celebrate things going well when you've got a fan favourite like him, really having that personality and really having someone that the fans can get behind. And it says a lot that we love to sing about him so much, about how we signed him on a free. It's really, really great to have that connection between fans and the player, and it's good to have a character like that.
Yeah, hopefully, as I say, you can see more of Yakimé. So I think that's the thing that we want to do, isn't it? We want to see more of him and see him become a real big sort of driving force behind the team doing well, rather than a player who just kind of pops up and scores every now and again and then, you know, divides the fan base, as we've just seen with those two questions. Our next question then is Sam Richards asking, do you believe Pelé, Rinomoto, Swift and Ajaria can all play in the same 11 and be effective? I think so, says Sam. And Jack Hillick adds on to that, do you think in the absence of Pelé, Reading play with a lot better tempo than in recent games? I would say with the first question, yes, absolutely, those four players can all play in the same 11. Ajaria on the wing, and then the other three is the central players, I think works really well, because I think that Rinomoto in the, you know, the more advanced role is actually something that he can utilise. We saw, I remember it was against Stoke last season, he made a really good driving run into the box to cross for a goal, and that's the sort of stuff he's capable of. Whether Swift is good enough playing further forward, I think he's probably better a bit back, where it's a bit, you know, bit of a more thoughtful, visionary game rather than a bit more hustle-bustle. But I think without Pelé in the team, you know, we have a ready-made replacement with Rinomoto. He probably is a bit more forward-thinking, a bit more direct, and that helps the tempo. But with him in the team, with all of them together, I think it worked. Or if he played it, it would work quite well.
I think to kind of answer both those questions at the same time, the tempo is, well, the second question more really, the tempo is dictated by the person who lies most deep in the midfield, the person who's really going to get on the ball most and really try and express himself and get Reading moving with passes. That can be John Swift or Charlie Adam. I don't think it can really be someone like Pelé.
He's a very play it safe sort of midfielder, isn't he? He just gets the ball, knocks it on, there you go sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no problem with that, having someone like Pelé in there. But you also want a really creative central midfielder in that deeper role to really give Reading some tempo. And to take the first question, I think if you have Rinomota and Pelé in there, you don't really quite have room for someone to lie deep and to really get on the ball and express themselves. If you're going to do that, you'd probably have Swift and Pelé deeper, and then probably Rinomota pushing further on. But then that doesn't really give a quite as creative, quite as dynamic midfield. So for me, it is Rinomota or Pelé, and then get a more of a ball player alongside them to really try and dictate the play.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It depends as to whether you think Rinomota can kind of be in there with Pelé, and it, I suppose Mark Bowen for the moment doesn't think that they can be. Moving on then, and Tommy asks, since we haven't had a proper pre-season with a full-strength team since Stam's first year, and that we have a great spine in the team other than the wingers now, do we need to go mad in the summer transfer window? Now, I can tell you for bats that, as it stands anyway, Lucas Boye and Pelé will be leaving us in the summer. When it comes to contracts and players that also will be leaving us in the summer as things stand, that we're looking at hang on one second as my computer healthily loads, Charlie Adam, Chris Gunter, McCleary, all out of contract, Tyler Blackett, Jordan Abita, obviously Danny Loader as well. All of those players. Now, there's quite a lot of players in the first team there that we could be losing. And those players will need replacing. You know, in effect, we will need a new right back if Gunter goes. If Blackett and Obita go, which I'd be surprised, but if both of them go, we'll need a new left back. Pelé goes, we'll need a new centre mid. Charlie Adam going as well, probably maybe we need two. Then we need the wingers. In terms of going mad in the summer windows, I think we still, if all those players go, we do end up having to do a bit of business still.
Yeah, I think we'll be very busy in the summer, and certainly the club are going to want to spend a fair amount of money to really boost the side. We've seen that in the last summer transfer window, that they're really keen to properly make the most of it, basically, and bring in all the quality that they can. I don't think it's going to be a particularly mad transfer window. I don't think they're going to overhaul it too much. I'd expect Mark Bowen to still be in charge then. We'll probably have Alexandre Matos as director of football when that's eventually confirmed, which it surely will be. But they can plan on how to basically improve this side rather than having to build a new one. You go back to this time last year and we were relying on five loan players that we didn't think we were going to be able to keep. Obviously, we did manage to keep two of them, but it was still a case of essentially going again in the summer and having to work with really difficult financial constraints. Had that last time, don't have it this time. There's a lot more room. There's a lot more ability to plan properly this summer, basically. And it's going to be a case of seeing where we are now and working out how to build on it, how to improve it, rather than kind of madly dashing back and forth to see what we can do, and hopefully avoiding the last minute rush that we had in summer last year.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I've always thought, whether because the transfer window, whether it's the deadline is going to get moved and such this summer, which it looks like it is, the adage of plan early and sign players early, I think is the best way of doing it. And with the way that, as I say, the contracts and everything, at the very least, most of these contracts are fringe players, but being able to plan ahead and everything is the key thing. Lee asks, after the Hull performance, as a good example, why do we struggle to break down teams that just want to put 10 men behind the ball? Do you think we need a different formation, such as genuine three up front in a 4-3-3? Sim, I suppose with the fixtures that we have coming up at home, this is going to be a pretty big issue, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And on the system, I hope we move away from the 3-5-2 pretty much completely, particularly at home. Because when you do have three centre-backs and you've got two wing-backs and probably a holding midfielder as well, there's too many players committed backwards, basically. There's too many of them staying back, not getting advanced higher up the pitch and getting involved in attacking phases. And hopefully persisting with the 4-2-3-1 that we've had in the last couple of games now, hopefully we can really develop a system that has a lot more attacking momentum, that's got fullbacks coming up and supporting wingers in Ajari and Mate, not necessarily out-and-out wingers, but certainly there's a lot more ability for Reading to create overloads out wide. We've got creative players committed further forward with, say, Elise in the 10 role, and if we can get that balance right, I think that system is much better suited for breaking teams down, basically. But what is going to be really important, really, really key, is getting support in and around Puskas, who will presumably be the lone striker. If he's isolated, if he doesn't get that support, we're going to find it really difficult to break teams down. And but if we do manage to essentially repeat what we had against Sheffield Wednesday, with Ajari coming in off the left and Mate coming in off the right, we can get that support in 4-2-3-1. And hopefully we can just keep on working at it and improving it, and the home form will improve nicely.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It what you said about the 3-5-2, it really did surprise me when we went back to it. When Bowen even kept it after Gomez started with it, I think it was just because he didn't know what to do for a little while anyway. But yeah, going back to it, it really did surprise me. And I think Puskas or Lucas Zhao, I think, will be the front man if we do have a 4-3-3. I think Zhao offers more overall, and Puskas, if he can start off with more overall, maybe has more potential and becomes the sort of the lead striker. But in you know, with that, those home games coming up, I think the more, you know, it's a case of the more sort of creative players you can fit in, the better. And perhaps the 4-2-3-1 is the best way of doing that at the moment, and that'll suit us perfectly. Wim asks, with safety all but in the bag, is it time, or has it already happened, for Bowen to officially close the book on McCleary, Blackett and other players out of contract, plus those like Pele who will likely be unsigned, or do we still go for the best possible team each game? My take on this is that you wait until the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks to do it. You can argue that there's no point in therefore doing it if you wait that late. But in reality, season-to-season momentum is something that I think exists, and I think it's something that with, you know, a lot of the players that we kind of mentioned there that are out of contract, and McCleary and such, aren't going to be, you know, part of that building of the momentum in the team anyway. So therefore, I think it's something that you delay a little bit for me, because you do want to get the best possible results, and with the fixtures coming up and with the FA Cup, I think that's still very important. But also, given the fact that most of the out-of-contract players, you know, Blackett and Pele aside perhaps, aren't really the most important players in the team, you can kind of do it as early as you want and just make sure that, you know, you don't detriment yourself in the meantime.
Yeah, I think your last point there was really the most important bit. These players that we're talking about, people like McCleary and Blackett, they're not the best players we have in their positions. As you've seen with McCleary, he can go out of the matchday squad, and even Luko as well, we've got the cover to really not have to miss them, especially with Elise stepping up and Omar Richards coming in at left back as well over Blackett. I think it's interesting that Richards has been starting recently, since the reports came out that Blackett had apparently agreed a pre-contract with a Turkish side in January. And I guess it's something we're going to see more of over the rest of the season, but perhaps more importantly is who are the players that are going to benefit from this? Because it's one thing to take out players like McCleary and Blackett, so on and so forth, but who are the players that are stepping up, who are maybe going to be here next season, maybe not, that are going to be the beneficiaries of the extra game time? If it's someone like Elise, then great. He's going to get more minutes and he's going to develop nicely. But we do need to make sure that game time is being used properly, that it is actually going to have a proper effect. Because I remember us back in 2015-16 when we had this same problem with a lot of loan players going out at the end of the season, and Brian McDermott trying to phase them out. We brought in people like Jake Cooper, who then after the summer barely played for us again because he wasn't in Yap Stam's plans. And it can be a little bit frustrating if you have these lone players, you phase them out, and you then don't have a proper plan on who's going to come in for them. And hopefully these are all things that Bowen and others are properly thinking through at the minute.
Yeah, I seem to remember, was it Rob Dickey and those sort of players came in and played a game at right back. And it, to be honest, I think that with that season, the mood around the club was so dour that any youth player coming in, and Josh Barrett was one that came in a little bit, it just wasn't the right atmosphere. And hopefully this year will be a bit different and a bit more positive. But yeah, it doesn't always work, and you can end up bringing players into just a really dodgy team, really, and that doesn't necessarily help them move forward. But it's certainly something that as the season builds out, I'll certainly be open to it. But I must admit, I'd rather us keep with the team as we're going at the moment. And I think Bowen is definitely of the opinion. I think Bowen, until it's mathematically impossible for us to be in the playoffs, I do think he will continue to play his best team. And certainly with the Cup, there's something to aim for. So how about we talk about the academy players in news bites and keep up with what they're doing, and then we'll jump onto that afterwards with the big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
This might well be the shortest news bites ever, to be honest, because there's been postponements and also the damning fact of very little news around the club this week. Adam Liddell's gone on loan to Derry City. Also, Odemayo and Andre Burley, who you saw feature in the FA Cup against Blackpool, have gone on loan to Waterford as well, which is kind of the John O'Shea link on that. So just a few loan spells that as you will be able to keep fully abreast of with the Tarlest End website as we go through our loan reports, which if you go online, see the latest one. There's a decent spell for Mark McNulty now. He's back at Hibernian, so plenty to read up on that. In terms of the under-23s, they are next playing on Monday night against Middlesbrough at 7 p.m. in the Premier League 2. The under-18s, they crashed out of the Premier League Cup semi-finals. This, I must admit, I'm a bit disappointed with the club when it comes to these sort of things, because the club made a big thing that we got to the Premier League Cup semi-finals, because we won the quarter-final and a thing is beat Everton, and article and everything on the website about it. We lost to Man City 5-2 on Saturday, I think it was. You wouldn't have known, really, unless you really, really tried hard to follow it. 3-0 down inside 35 minutes. Lost 5-2, so we're out of that tournament. But as I say, it'd just been nice if we'd have known a bit more about it, even if it wasn't a good news story, as it were. The under-18s next against Swansea on their fixture list. And the women, I think last week I said that their game had been postponed. Once again, the women have fallen foul of the weather, and the women's team was meant to play Leicester in the FA Cup. That's been postponed. Now they did play in midweek, though. They beat West Ham 2-0, so they're now fourth in the WSL. It's a really tight race for fourth. They're nowhere near the top three. Arsenal, Man City and Chelsea are miles clear. But Everton, Man United and Reading are really competing for that top four spot at the moment. So that really good win against West Ham, who also would have been in the mix had they beaten us. So the women's team doing really well there. And as that season sort of draws towards a climax, we'll hopefully be paying a bit more attention to it and give you the full update and the download on what's going on in that. So with News Bites, I wouldn't want to say brushed to one side because it deserves a bit more respect to that. But nonetheless, that being that, we can move on now to big match preview and a trip up to Yorkshire once again next weekend.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
We have the midweek off sim, which I think is just such a, as much as we all love football, it is such a luxury to have a midweek free of it. For a change, I think the last time we didn't have a midweek game might have been the second week of January. So we've been very, very busy these last few weeks. So the team fully deserving of a week off, and then they need it as well, really, because we are going to Leeds, who are second in the Championship, on Saturday. Before we talk about that, though, a quick update on the prediction league, because there's been a lot going on. The West Brom game wins were predicted by myself, Johnny, Ollie and Westy. And the Sheffield Wednesday victories were predicted by myself, Handbags and Sim. So I am currently in the lead in the prediction league with 29 points. Sim on 21, Johnny on 18, Westie and Ollie on 15, Wim on 13, Handbags on 10. So Sims, you made a really nice little march back towards me in the last couple of weeks, but hopefully I'm keeping you just about at bay as we go into this Leeds game then. And this one really, you know what, I think going to, you know, the second team in the league and all this sort of stuff, we would traditionally be quite worried. But as we've mentioned, this is could really go either way. This could be a classic gate-crashing party pooper away day, or it could just be, you know, a day where we realise exactly where we are in the league, because Leeds, not all that great recently. They did win on the weekend, but they've won two, drawn two, and lost five of their last nine. Sim, this feels like a good time to play them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key thing is there's no real pressure on Reading in this game. It's not like we're in desperate need of getting 3 points or anything. If we can go up there and get a good result, get a point maybe, it's going to be a good afternoon for us. And if we can go there and play with that freedom, play with that enjoyment, then I fancy us to make things difficult for Leeds. And obviously they've had a bad time of it themselves recently, and hopefully we can make the most of that. And if we do, then you never know, we might be able to spring a shock.
We had a really good grip on them, I felt, in our first meeting earlier in the season, at late winner, sort of coming by the deflected cross. And that shows to me that Bowen has a decent idea of how to sort of counter the more creative teams, the slower build-up teams. It's almost like those are the ones that really we enjoy playing against most at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Reading are really good at getting men behind the ball, making it really compact and organised, and it's not always going to look pretty. And certainly it's sometimes going to contribute to the striker looking particularly isolated if we're playing one up top. But the benefit of it is that we do have a really well-organised defence, and that's shown with the small number of goals we conceded on the road, and just generally how few goals we've conceded under Bowen, and the fact that it was in the last game against Leeds that it was, what, one goal from our set piece, a really rapid break from Leeds that won it. Otherwise, we weren't opened up too much, and even in the West Brom game, we weren't at our very best defensively, but we still, I think, generally contained them pretty well on the whole. And that organisation has come across really well under Bowen, and it's credit to him that he's managed to instil that in the months since he's arrived.
It is, and it's, as I said, this game really lands into that classic Championship category, the territory that anything can happen with it, and that makes our job of predicting it significantly more difficult. And I think I'm probably going to err on the side of caution and say a 2-1 Leeds victory. I do think we've got great potential of scoring, as we don't concede too many goals, but Leeds, maybe this is the sort of game where a refereeing decision comes to bite us, or something a bit dodgy comes to just take it away from us and favours, you know, the bigger the promotion chasing team and everything like that. And maybe this is just one of those games where we just land on the wrong side of a tight decision, and that catches us out for a defeat. What do you think on a prediction level?
I'm fairly confident, actually. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw, because with the exception of that 3-0 loss that we had at home last season to them, generally there haven't been too many goals in games between Leeds and Reading. It's been pretty tight matches that have been about getting your tactics right, staying organised, and really having that focus. And when Reading have had that, they've shown they're a match for Leeds. Maybe not in terms of quality, but certainly the organisation and defensive side compensates for that. And even when we were a really poor side under Paul Clement, I remember that game up against Leeds at Elland Road, I think it was late 2018, when we really gave them a good game, because we got our tactics right, because we were so well organised and everyone knew their roles well, and we actually had a really good performance that night. So if we can copy that kind of game, and maybe the 1-0 win we had under Yapstam a couple of years ago as well, then there's certainly the precedent there to go and make things difficult for Leeds and get a result.
God, that 1-0 defeat under Clement was our last trip to Leeds, wasn't it? That feels like an absolute lifetime ago, doesn't it? With with Mark McNulty missing that late penalty. It just goes to show that, you know, football changes pretty quickly at Reading these days. So hopefully it will change in terms of the result as well, because, yeah, it's certainly been a string of defeats against Leeds recently. And we will be back to discuss that game and only that game, which is, you know, I just think one of the nice things that we can sit here this week and say that the team have fully earned their week off. And Sim, thank you very much for heading up to Sheffield and racing back down through the weather to chat on this week's podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And we shall be back in a week's time to review that trip to Leeds. And as I say, you can just enjoy the nice week ahead with Reading off the back of a victory, our Sheffield salvation. We've broken our league win duck, as it were, our dry spell. And we're now in that cuddly, comfortable mid-table spot of 15th, which we all dreamed about at the start of the season. And now with the fixtures ahead, we can think about kicking on and ending the season on a high. And hopefully this 3-0 win against Sheffield Wednesday is exactly what we need to commence that enjoyable cruise to the finish line. Until next time, thank you for listening and come on your arse.
You smile, funny how the crowds always